Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
Season 5, Episode 1 of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Redcon 1, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Happy New Year. This is our first show for the year 2018. I'm your host, John Hansen, and we are glad you are back, or if you're listening for the first time, welcome to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk about the old school days of bodybuilding. And on this season, this will be episode 1 of season 5. On season 5, we're going to be talking about the NABBA Mr. Universe competition, which took place every year in London, England. It started in the first official NABBA Universe contest was in 1950, but it really started in 1948 when John Grimmick won the title. And so our guest on the show today is Wayne Galash. And Wayne, as many of you know, is a true historian of the sport of bodybuilding. He started doing videotapes of the competitions back in 1970. In fact, he was at the 1970 NABBA Universe, and we're going to talk about that in our conversation today with Wayne. And Wayne has videotaped and photographed many of the legends of the sport of bodybuilding, including Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sergio Oliva, Franco Colombo, Frank Zane, Bill Pearl, Reg Park, Dave Draper. I can go on and on and on. But Wayne had the foresight to actually videotape these people and take movies of them. This was before video. So Wayne had the foresight to do that way back in the day before anyone else was doing it. And thank God that he did do it, because now we have films of these legends of the sport when they were in their prime. And if it wasn't for Wayne, we wouldn't have that. We would only have still photographs. So Wayne was really a true icon in the sport as far as someone who was really instrumental and preserving the legends of bodybuilding as he did. So I've been a big fan of Wayne. He has a website at gmv.com.au because he's in Australia. So I urge you guys to go to that website, gmv.com.au, and he has all of his DVDs, and now he has downloads. He started off actually doing Super 8 millimeter films, and when I started buying some of Wayne's products when I was like 20 years old, that's what he had available. And then, of course, he switched to videotapes, and then he went to DVDs, and now he has a download, so you can just download right from his site. But he has some of these old classic competitions. He has some videos and workouts with some of the great legends of the sport, as I mentioned. He did a lot with Mike Mentzer also. So go to his site, check it out. And Wayne is the perfect guy to talk about the NABBA Mr. Universe, because he was at every NABBA Mr. Universe from 1970 to 2008. So that's an incredible record. So we are going to talk today about the history of the NABBA Universe. But before we get to that, I want to mention our sponsors. We are brought to you again by Redcon One. So thank you to Aaron Singerman and Redcon One for sponsoring again another season of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And at Redcon One, everyone wants to be a champion. Everybody wants to be the best. But at Redcon One, they believe in working hard to achieve your goals. Whether you're killing it in the gym or running a six-minute mile, Redcon One has something for those willing to put in the work. They have a premier clinically dosed pre-workout called Total War that is the perfect companion to your workout to give you that extra push to break through your mental and physical barriers. You can also fuel your body after those workouts with the revolutionary MRE. This is the only whole food complete meal replacement with protein coming from salmon, chicken, beef, and eggs, and carbs coming from sweet potatoes and oats, and it also contains 10 grams of fat from MCT oil. It is the best-tasting complete meal you will ever have. So go to redcon1.com and try the very best that sports nutrition has to offer. Redcon 1, the highest state of readiness. And you can enter the discount code LEGENDS on the website, and you will get a 15% discount off your order. And we're also brought to you by Old School Labs. I have been with Old School Labs now for several years. And with so many supplements on the market, it can be hard to know which brand is the right one. As a three-time Natural Mr. Universe and Natural Mr. Olympia winner, the quality of the supplements and knowing what I'm taking is very important to me, which is why Old School Labs is going to give you 12% off your purchase. So if you just go to oldschoollabs.com, Use the discount code LEGEND12 at your checkout. You'll get a 12% discount off of any products that you order. And they also have the brand new Vintage Brawn Protein, which contains protein coming from eggs, milk, and beef. So you want to check this out. I've been using this for the last month. It's a great tasting protein, and it's one of those whole food proteins where you're getting the protein sources from eggs, milk, and beef. So check that out at oldschoollabs.com. They are the sponsor of the new classic physique Olympia champion, Breon Ansley, who won the title in 2017. And Breon is getting ready for the Arnold Classic in 2018 to show that he is still the champ. They also have brought on recently Samir Benoot along with Sergio Oliva Jr. So we've got a great team over at Old School Labs. So you want to check them out. All right. As I mentioned in our interview with Wayne Galash today, we are going to be talking about the NAVA Mr. Universe. So what Wayne and I did was we made up a list of all the winners of the competition. And of course, the history of the NAVA Universe is so extensive, we weren't able to cover it all today. So we have part one of our interview with Wayne today. And we are going to talk about the NAVA Universe when it first started in 1948, all the way up until 1970, when Arnold Schwarzenegger won his last NAVA Universe. So we'll talk about some of the previous winners who were legends, such as John Grimmick and Steve Reeves and Reg Park and Bill Pearl and Frank Zane. And of course, Arnold, who won the title four times. He won the Amateur Mr. Universe in 1967. And then he went on to win the professional division of that title from 1968 through 1970. And that was before he went over to the IFBB. So before the IFBB started, the NAVA Universe was really the premier title in the world for all the top bodybuilders, and usually the Mr. America winner from the AAU Mr. America. This is, of course, before the MPC started. The AAU Mr. America winner of each year would usually go over to England and compete against the world's best. And they had winners from England, from America, from Japan, from India. I mean, the best of the best of all the bodybuilders around the world would always compete at the NAVA Universe. So it's full of history. I think if you love the history of bodybuilding, or you're wanting to learn more about the history of bodybuilding, you're going to love this conversation between me and Wayne Galash about every year of the NAVA Universe from 1948 and 1950 all the way up till 1970. So we're going to cover over 20 years of competitions in our interview with Wayne today. All right. And I said, Happy New Year to everybody. This is the brand new year. We started the Bodybuilding Legends podcast probably about 6 months ago. So we've had some great interviews, and we look forward to having you guys around as listeners for 2018. We hope to get a lot more great seasons and a lot of great interviews and a lot more great guests on the show. For this season of season five, where we're talking about the NAVA Mr. Universe, I am planning on talking to Jim Haislop. And Jim, of course, was the 1968 AAU Mr. America winner, but he did compete in the NAVA Universe in 1969. In fact, that was Jim's last contest. And many people are wondering why Jim quit so quickly, because he had the potential to go all the way, maybe even be Mr. Olympia winner, because he had everything. He had the proportions, he had the size, he had the structure, good looking guy. So we're going to hopefully talk to Jim at his home out here in Tampa, Florida, probably within the next week. And I also hope to talk to John Citroni, who was another great competitor from the 1960s. He competed against Arnold a few times when Arnold won the NAVA Universe. So John still looks fantastic today, and he's competed for many, many years, well into his master's years. So hopefully we can talk to John soon, and we can get his interview on. And there's a few more people I want to talk to, so I'm trying to get those on board. And hopefully Peter McGuff can join us again, because I know Peter was, being from England himself, he was at quite a few of those NAVA Universe competitions. We do have an interview with Eddie Robinson up, if you've seen that on our YouTube channel or on bodybuildinglegendshow.com. That's part one of our video interview with Eddie. And I've got some great clips on there from the 1986 Junior Nationals that Eddie won over Sean Ray. And then in the overall post down, he beat out Dean Caputo from the heavyweights and Shane DeMora from the middleweights. And Johnny Morant was also in that contest. So it was really a great contest stacked with a lot of great competitors. Sean Ray at the time was only 20 years old, and Eddie was only 21. And Eddie won the overall Junior Nationals at only 21 years old. I think he had like 21 inch arms at that show. He was just an amazing phenomenon at that young of an age. And you could tell this guy was going to definitely be a pro one day. So check that out. That's on bodybuildinglegendshow.com. And if you're on the website, be sure to sign up for our email list as I will be sending out emails every week to let you know what's going on with the podcast and what's going on with the website. So you definitely want to be on our mailing list for that. If you're on our YouTube channel, make sure you make comments on each video so we can know if you like it or if you don't like it. And so we've got part two coming up of the Eddie Robinson interview, probably in another week or two in January. And then we'll talk about Eddie winning the 1989 USA Championships and also his career as a pro and his time with the WBF organization, as well as his relationship with Vince McMahon and Joe Weider. So that's going to be another great interview. I also want to mention coming up in 2018, I was lucky enough to be invited to a conference that is going to be taking place in Colorado Springs, Colorado on the weekend of March 2nd through the 4th, which is also the weekend of the Arnold. So I won't be at the Arnold, unfortunately. But if you want to check out this conference, it's at www.aaai-isma-fitness. So I'll say that again because it's sort of long. It's AAAI, three A's, dash ISMA Fitness. And they are going to have a One World Conference in Colorado Springs, Colorado on March 2nd through 4th. And it's basically a bunch of conferences in order to get a personal training certification. So it's a fitness certification program, and you can check that out at that website. And I will be giving three seminars that weekend about natural bodybuilding. So if you are in the area or you want to go check that out, it's supposed to be an absolutely beautiful hotel out in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And I will be out there the first weekend of March. And I'm also planning on being at some of their other conferences this year, including Atlantic City in June and Cape Cod, Massachusetts in August, and then in Baltimore on October. So they've invited me to come to all their conferences this year. So check that out. It's again at the website is aaai-isma-fitness.com. All right. And thanks again to people who have bought my book for the holidays. We had a lot of sales of my book, Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, Volume 1, and also my new training book, The MP6 Workout. And the sales on Amazon really went up toward the end of the month in December. So a lot of people must have been buying them as Christmas gifts. So thanks to all of you who purchased it. And as I said before, I do have some autographed copies at home. So if you want to purchase one from me directly, just go to naturalolympia@gmail.com and email me, and I will send one of those out to you. All right. I also want to mention that we are brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine. And Florida Alternative Medicine, age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They have a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing they're there for you every step of the way. They offer very competitive pricing along with their quality products and services. So those are just a few additional reasons to give them a call. So call them for more information and experience firsthand what sets them apart from the rest. You can call them at 813-922-8939, or if you want to email them at info@flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's info@flalternativemeds.com. And again, their phone number is 813-922-8939, and they are here out in Tampa, Florida, but they will work with anybody from around the country. And if you call them or email them, mention our show and use the promotion code LEGEND, and you'll get a free consultation along with 20% off of any package. So be sure to give them a call and check them out. All right, that is the intro to our first show of the new year. So here is our interview with Wayne Galash, where we talk about the history of the NABBA Mr. Universe contest. You're really going to love this interview. Here you go. All right, joining us from Australia is my friend Wayne Galash. And today we are here to talk about the NABBA Mr. Universe contest. And Wayne, this is a contest that was filled with some of bodybuilding's greats throughout history. And before the IFBB really got started, the NABBA Universe was the contest to win. And a lot of the AAU Mr. America winners, which at the time was the biggest contest in America, they would go over to the Mr. Universe. And so we had some real legends of the sport compete in the NABBA Universe contest, and a lot of people who are only following bodybuilding from the Mr. Olympia forward may not realize how great of history, you know, this contest really was.
Yes, this used to be the greatest contest in the world, particularly up until, oh, I would say into the 70s, up until the time when Frank Zane and Arnold won this contest. All the greats of American bodybuilding were seen in the NABBA universe.
Yeah. So the really first year they had the NABBA universe was 1950, but you said that it really started in 1948, but it wasn't called the NABBA universe then.
That's correct. They decided to put on a universe to coincide with the Olympic Games being held in London in 1948. And there was a health and strength league, and that organization organized the contest, and they just did it as a one-only contest. Hmm. So that took place in 1948, and John Gremick defeated Steve Reese for the title.
Wow.
Then the next year, nothing happened because they had no special reason to run a Mr. Universe. And then in 1950, NABBA was formed, and from then on, they staged a NABBA Universe every year.
So in 1948, they had the Mr. Universe because of the Olympic Games were in London.
Yes, that was the reason they decided to hold a Mr. Universe contest. So it was the first Universe contest in the United Kingdom. I believe there might have been one in USA prior to that, so I don't think they can claim it was the first ever Mr. Universe contest.
So Steve Reeves in that first contest, he was only like 22 years old, I think, and when John Gremick beat him. Wasn't that sort of a controversial contest because Steve had more of a classic type, wide shoulders, smaller waist, where Gremick was more thickly built and more, I guess, blocky, you could call it.
Yes, you could say that. Gremick was the legend. Steve Reeves was the new boy, the up-and-coming champion. And I would say that the judges were probably more of the vintage and of the appreciation of the John Gremick style of physique, and that's probably why he won it. Not to say he didn't deserve to win it, mm-hmm. because their judging criteria would have been based a lot on the past reputation as well as what they saw on the stage. And, of course, John Gremick was a master poser. Mm-hmm. But then Steve Reeves wasn't a bad poser either. So it's a bit like the new young guy. If he's going to beat the old champion, he's got to be about 10% better. And, of course, John Gremick won that title.
I remember reading an article about Steve Reeves, and they said that he went to the microphone after he lost, and he said he thought John Gremick was the most perfectly developed man in the world. That's what he told the audience.
Well, I haven't heard that story before, but Steve Reeves was certainly being a most gracious loser for saying something like that.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about 1950 then. Now, what does NABBA stand for, Wayne?
Okay, National Amateur Bodybuilders Association.
National Amateur Bodybuilders Association, okay. So in 1950, then, Steve Reeves wins and at 24 years old, and he wins the first NABBA Mr. Universe, and he beats out Reg Park, who's only 22 years old. So Reg was the new rising champion, and Reg is from England, and Steve was from America.
Yes. Now, before the contest in England, I understand that Reg Park was a hot favorite, mm-hmm. and also the British people were hoping to see Reg Park win because the Sandow statuette was being offered as the prize. I'm not sure of the exact history of this statue, whether it was an original from Sandow or wherever, but it was a very important statuette, and the British, I understand, were hoping that Reg Park was going to keep it in Britain. Hmm. But, of course, Steve won that title. And you may probably do some research on that trophy and find out exactly where it came from, because I believe it had quite a history.
Yeah, I think Randy Roach wrote a little bit about it in Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors, but that's interesting that that's where the Sandow statue actually started, was at the very first 1950 Mr. Universe and the NABBA Universe.
Yes, and now, of course, a version of it is the Mr. Olympia mm-hmm. Trophy each year.
Wow, that's crazy. So the following year, Steve Reeves does not compete. Steve Reeves actually had a very short career. I mean, for as famous a bodybuilder and a legend that he is, I think it was mostly from the Hercules movies, right?
Yes, he. I would say that after his NABBA Universe victory, he decided that he could probably do better in life by pursuing other interests and making the most of his enormous potential, well, as a, both an actor and as a star, because he had star qualities. And I'm sure people told him that, and that's why he went off in a direction which took him into the movies.
Yeah, it's amazing when you think that he quit bodybuilding at 24-year-old. That's crazy.
Yes, we wonder what he might have achieved if he'd kept going the way Arnold kept going.
Yeah, I remember when Joe Weider started the Mr. Olympia, he said one of the reasons he was starting the Mr. Olympia was for all the Mr. Universe winners who really had nowhere else to go after they won the Mr. Universe.
Yeah.
So in 51, Reg Park comes back and he wins his first Mr. Universe at only 23 years old. And you said there was no American competitors that year, right?
According to the results, I see no Americans listed in 1951. The tradition hadn't really got going with Americans coming to the universe until a few years later, and it looks to me like that really got going in 1953 when Bill Burr won the amateur universe. That seems to be the next major competitor from America, from USA.
One thing I noticed about that show in 51, Wayne, was there was 43 competitors in that contest. So it was a huge contest.
In those days, that was a pretty good turnout of competitors. Yes, it was.
Okay, so now we go into 1952, and the amateur winner was Mohamed Nassar from Egypt, and the pro winner. Now, was this the first year they had an amateur and a pro?
Yes, that would be correct, because looking at my notes, 1952 was the first pro universe, and they must have had some good reason for starting this second competition, and maybe some of the amateur competitors weren't happy at people that were entering, so they decided to make it two divisions, amateur and pro.
And what's interesting is they really didn't have any money, right, for the pros. It was just a
no.
title.
It was a prestige title, in my opinion. You didn't go in the pro universe to win money. And in fact, it's only started to have a proper reward in more recent years.
Yeah. So the winner of the pro that year was Juan Ferrero from Spain.
Yes.
Who I've never
He's probably little known in USA, but he was known as a master poser.
Oh, okay.
And he had a very symmetrical physique.
So the following year in 53, that was notable because Bill Pearl, who won the Mr. America that year, he goes over to London and he wins his first Mr. Universe. And of course, Bill Pearl became a legendary bodybuilder.
You could say Bill Pearl burst on the scene in 1953 because that gave him maximum exposure because he won an international title.
And you know what was interesting in that contest? I was looking at the results. Sean Connery, James Bond, was the contest he was in. He competed in the NABBA Universe. He took like sixth or seventh place, I think.
That's right, yes. He had what I would class as today a good average physique, but not good enough to really stand out in those days, because I would say he hadn't specialized in bodybuilding long enough to make a bigger mark.
Yeah, but he went on to bigger and better things.
He certainly did, and he did pretty well financially too.
Right. And the pro winner that year was Arnold Dyson from England?
Yes, he was a big chap, big bone guy, wide, broad shoulders. Again, probably not really known in USA, but he was something of a local hero in England.
Okay. So the following year, Enrico Tomas, was he from the USA? He won the amateur.
Yes, he was from USA. I've got a feeling he lived in the New York area. That's my memory. This is, of course, well before my time, but I certainly remember seeing photographs of him. And he had a very refined physique. He looked like that shape and condition were his strong points. He wasn't a giant, so he was the winner in 54. And interestingly, there was a short class winner from USA called John Leonard. And I must apologize to John that I'm afraid I had never heard of him before.
One thing I also want to mention about 53, before we move on, Jules Bacon, who was the 1943 Mr. America winner, he was second in the pro. And John Isaacs, who I believe was Reg Park's brother-in-law, correct?
That's correct, yes, that's right.
He won the short class that year. So John Isaacs, when I was going through my notes here, he competed in the NABBA Universe many, many times.
Yeah, he had a very powerful physique, and he was always right up around about the top position. Maybe he wasn't always a winner, but he was certainly well-known and much loved as a great physique.
And when I started bodybuilding in the late 70s, Wayne, I remember seeing pictures of John Isaac. He was still competing, and he was much older, and he still looked really good, even as a Masters competitor, or an older competitor, I should say.
Yes, yeah, he had a good, strong career.
And then in 54, when Enrico Tomas won the amateur, I also noticed Dennis Stallard, who became a big figurehead with the IFBB in the 1970s. In fact, he was the guy on stage directing Arnold how to pose in the movie Pumping Iron. He was in that contest. He only took seventh place, but it was interesting to note that Dennis Stallard was a former competitive bodybuilder.
Yes, that's right. He was a Welshman, and he held the position, I believe, of NABBA president in Wales, or he was certainly a top official in Wales, and I remember him for a number of years. And in fact, I even met him in Wales in 1970. And he was a very friendly guy, very knowledgeable, had his heart in the right place. And I had a feeling that he was also involved at the 1980 Olympia.
Okay. I think you might be right. And the pro that year in 54, it was Jim Park. Is that correct?
Yes, Jim Park from USA. He had a build which I would put in a similar style to that of Frank Zane. He was shape and style, and he was not massive. He was just a very nice physique, probably what you'd call a classic physique today.
And he won the AAU Mr. America a couple of years before that in 1952.
Yes, he got a good double there with the America and the Pro Universe.
Yeah. I noticed some of these earlier contests, it seemed like later on, the Mr. America winner would go right over to London and compete. But in some of the earlier contests, sometimes they would wait 2 years or 4 years later, and then they would go to the Mr. Universe.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. Traditionally, I seem to recall most times the current AAU America winner would do the Universe pretty much straight away.
Right.
But sometimes they did wait a year or two. Maybe they just wanted to get a bit more size, I'm guessing. But quite often they did it the same year or within 12 to whatever months, a short period after their Mr. America victory.
Yeah, I also noticed, like, looking at the careers of Bill Pearl and Reg Park, it was interesting because they would win the Mr. Universe, and then they would take like sometimes 4 or 5 years off, come back, win it again, and then come back and win it again another 4 or 5 years later. So it wasn't like they didn't feel like the need to compete every year. They would just compete whenever I guess they felt like it.
That's a good way to put it. I think that what they did, they had other priorities in the in between years, whether it was business or whether it was to do with their physique, with their style of training. Perhaps they wanted to really work on something. So it's a very good point you make, because when you get up to the Arnold era, he did it every year.
Yeah.
From when he started his run, he was runner-up to Chester Yorton, and then he continued on each year through to 1970. So that was maybe a little bit unusual when you talk about the other winners who won it more than once.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get to the modern time, you had Eddie Irwin, and he won, I think it was 5 in a row. And again, that was a little bit unusual, because that sort of thing is not happening today.
Yeah, I remember Bill Pearl speaking, you know, I remember reading his autobiography, and he said that he was more concerned with running his gym business. And he would win every time he won a Mr. Universe, he would use that to promote his gym business. So I think he was thinking more of the gym business and his livelihood than he was of winning the titles.
That's exactly what I thought at the time, yes, that he was moving his priorities to suit the circumstances of his life.
And I think Arnold was probably one of the first bodybuilders to look at it as more of a sportsman, like a Muhammad Ali, where he wanted to be an established champion and wanted to win every year and show everybody that he was the best, you know?
Yes, that's exactly what he wanted to do. And to a lesser degree, Frank Zane was similar.
Yeah.
Because he did 70, 71, and 72. And in that period, he got two overall titles of amateur and professional. So he put in quite a solid period of time there when he was at his peak in his NABBA career. And what's interesting is that he also competed in the IFBB pretty much at the same time.
Yeah.
And I did a bit of research and I saw that he did both the 72 Olympia and the 72 Universe in the same year.
Yeah.
But I suspect that the Olympia may have come before the Universe, and if it had been the other way around, who knows if he'd been allowed to go in the Olympia that year. So there's just a thought to ponder.
All right, let's go to 1955, and Mickey Hargitay, who went on to become famous because he married Jane Mansfield, he won the amateur Mr. Universe that year.
That's correct, yes. I've actually seen that trophy at his house when I went to his house in 2000, the year 2000. I went to his house, and over two periods, I recorded his life story on video. And so far, nobody has seen any of it. I've just been trying to work out the best way to actually present it. But at his home, he said to me, "You can film and photograph in any room." Hmm. And I spotted his trophy. And this was really interesting. The actual nameplate with the year of the Universe victory had been removed from the trophy, and he said that somebody had actually stolen it when visiting his house.
Oh, wow. What a shame.
And a pretty low thing to do. And it hadn't been replaced at that time when I saw the trophy. So that was a little bit of history, because I think that would be the first and only old trophy of the Universe I've ever seen.
Wow.
So that was very special when I saw that in the year 2000. And then, of course, Mickey passed away a few years ago.
Yeah. And his daughter is the actress, and she's on Law & Order.
That's right, yes. I never got to meet her, but I met Mickey's sons and, of course, his wife, Ellen.
Yeah. So in the tall class that year, Dick Dubois, if I'm pronouncing that right, from the USA, he was in second place.
Yes, that must have been quite a battle, because Dick was a very outstanding physique, and so was Mickey. So I wonder just how close that was with the judging. I've, of course, not seen the judging sheets for that class. I think they've been lost a long time ago. But I bet that was quite a tight and maybe even a contentious victory at the time.
Mm-hmm. Did Mickey win the AAU Mr. America also?
I'm not too sure on that. I really don't know.
Okay. Well, he also was famous because Arnold played him in that movie about Jane Mansfield where Lonnie Anderson played his wife. Yeah,
yeah, that's a great movie. I've watched that a number of times.
Right. Okay, and the pro winner that year in 55 was Leo Robert, and he was from Canada. I remember seeing pictures of Leo. He had the mustache and sort of a shorter, stockier bodybuilder.
That's right, yeah. He had a different shape, more of a modern-day shape, I would call it, in many ways. He was not the lean type. He was just more the Herculean type of physique.
Right. Yeah, I imagine back then in the 50s, they weren't really going for definition as much as just proportion and size, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right, yes.
And then Clarence Ross was the tall class winner in the pro that year.
Yes, so apparently that means Leo Robert beat him in the overall.
Right.
And I can only imagine that probably Leo Robert got it on condition. I'm just sort of guessing this because it's very hard to compare when you're not there and you're only looking at photographs. But I would think that condition probably got Leo Robert the overall place over Clarence Ross.
Now, Clarence was very famous during his time. He won the Mr. America in 1945, so that was 10 years earlier. And he won the 1948 Mr. USA, which back then the Mr. USA, I remember, was one of the top titles, almost like on par with the Mr. America.
Yeah. Yes, Clarence Ross had a huge reputation and a wonderful winning physique. So all I can say is Leo Robert must have been right at the top of his game on that day.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if Clarence was really at his best, if that was 10 years after he won the Mr. America.
Yes, you have to consider that maybe he was a little bit past his best at that time.
Right. All right, so we move on to the next year, which was 56, and the amateur winner was Ray Schaefer, also from the USA.
Yes. I wonder how many people in USA know much about him, because he was quite a legend in his day. He was an amazing physique.
Yeah, he won the Mr. America that year. He was one of the guys that he won the America, and then he went right over to London to compete in the Universe, and then he won the overall at the Universe.
That's right. Yes, I remember reading he was quite a sensation in England. But the rather sad thing is that today now on social media, you would never even hear his name. Am I correct?
Yeah. I mean, I know a lot, some of the Mr. America winners, but I really don't know much about Ray Schaefer.
Yes, yeah, I'd love to know more about him, what happened with his career, what happened with his life after his victory in the Universe, but these are the things we don't really know today, because if it wasn't in the magazines at the time, we have no way of knowing what happened to them.
Yeah. Now, in your notes here, Wayne, you said that Wally Emery was in fifth place in the medium class.
Yeah, he was another USA competitor. But I must admit that I can't ever remember reading anything much about him or even seeing a photograph of him. And I dare say you're not familiar with him either.
No.
So at least we've given him a little bit of a mention, which he deserves, because any placing in a NABBA Universe is something to be proud of.
Yeah. So the pro winner that year was Jack Dellinger. And he beat out Bill Pearl, who won the tall class. So they're splitting up the pro division into short class and tall class. So Jack Dellinger was a great bodybuilder, because he ended up beating Bill Pearl for the overall title for the pro division.
Yes, I would say that would have been one of the few times that Bill Pearl was beaten in his career.
Yeah, definitely.
And I heard it said that after that defeat, Bill Pearl vowed to come back bigger and better and to take the title next time. Wow. And that's exactly what he did.
And I also noticed John Isaacs again was in that contest, and he was second in the pro division in his class, in the short class.
Yes, you'd have to say that year had a fantastic standard, didn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, imagine Pearl, Dellinger, Isaac. And there are other top physiques in there as well. So that was a hell of a year.
Yeah. And Bill Pearl, it should be mentioned, was only, I think, 26 years old at the time. So he already was developing quite a reputation for himself only in his 20s.
Yes, that's true. And I don't think that he was probably beaten again for the rest of his career. Just thinking about it, I can't remember Bill ever getting less than being the winner from here on. Yeah. So that was a big point in his career when he was defeated by Jack for the overall in 1956.
And Jack Dellinger was, I believe, Mr. America in 1949. So, you know, 7 years later, and he was still at the top of his game.
Yeah, he had a good career. And I had an idea that he came from the Oakland or San Francisco area.
Yeah, I remember him, I think, training with Steve Reeves, I believe. They were, like, good friends.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, so in 1957, John Lees, who I'm not familiar with from Britain, he won the overall Mr. Universe that year.
Yeah, he was a tall guy, a big guy, well-known in England, but I'm afraid probably little-known outside of England, apart from people that are real, you know, lovers of history, they know about John Lees. So I remember him being on the cover of Health and Strength magazine.
Okay.
And he was very popular in Britain. And then the Frenchman, Arthur Robin, won the Pro Universe that year. And again, I remember lots of good pictures of him, but I doubt he got much publicity in USA.
Okay, so we go to 58, and Earl Clark was the winner that year in the amateur.
Correct, yes. He was a shorter guy, had a stocky sort of physique, sort of a Herculean type of physique.
Okay.
I'm not sure what he won in USA. So have you got any of his background?
No, I don't.
And while you're just looking that up, of course, 1958 was a very good year for Reg Park. And so he had returned to the universe and had a very good victory in the professional class.
Right. Yeah, I don't see much about Earl. He won Mr. California, but he didn't win the America or anything. So
that's very interesting. So he obviously peaked for the Navi universe, and that was probably the highlight of his career.
Right. So Reg Park wins the pro division that year in 1958 at 30 years old.
Yes, because by this time it's now 7 years after he won his amateur overall title.
Right.
At 1951, and here he is now winning the pro. And I'm just trying to think if he did compete in any of those in-between years, but I don't think he did.
No, he didn't.
Because he certainly would have been a winner if he had, I'm sure, of that.
Right.
So he was probably building his career and doing other things in those years.
Yeah, he owned a string of gymnasiums, correct?
In
England,
right.
And then he moved to South Africa.
That's right. I saw a recent reprint of an interview that I think Robert Nalen did with him, and Robert asked him, how many gyms do you own? And he said, I've sold them all.
Wow, okay.
So he didn't actually say how many he had owned, but I heard it was a string of gyms, and of course he used to live in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Exactly. I remember reading Arnold's biography, and when he visited Reg Park after Arnold won the universe the first time, he said that he owned a string of gymnasiums, he lived in a huge house, and Arnold really admired that about him.
Well, just a quick aside, I was in Johannesburg this year, and I was going to try and find Reg Park's house to see if I could see it from the road to get a photograph of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I ran out of time, and I didn't really have anybody who could tell me what the address used to be, so it needed more research and planning, so I didn't get to see Reg Park's house.
Reg's wife, Marion, passed away also, right, Wayne?
Yes, that's right. She lived longer than he did. He unfortunately passed away. I believe it was from the results of melanoma.
Right, right. And I also want to mention that year in 58, John Isaacs again was the short class winner in the pro division.
Yes, he was consistent.
So we go to 1959 now, and Len Sell was the winner from England in the amateur division.
Yes. Lansell was a shorter physique, extremely symmetrical. He was one of the bodybuilders that I looked up to when I first started competing.
Okay.
And but I remember he got the double. He won the amateur universe, and then I think it was a year or so later, I believe, he won the pro universe. And he was a gym owner. I'm just looking here. And I'm sure he won another universe title. And he was very popular, again, with the British fans, but probably little known outside of UK. But he certainly had a wonderful physique. I seem to recall he had a gym in London. That's where he lived.
Okay.
So he was very central. And all of the universe contests in those years were held in London.
Yeah. And Earl Menard, who also went on to have quite a good career in the IFBB, he won first place in the tall class that year.
Well, that was a very good effort too, because the tall class was traditionally always very tough.
Yeah. And one thing I noticed also looking at the list of competitors was Pierre Vandensteen from Belgium, who also went on to have a great career in the IFBB. He was third place in the short class.
And when I think of Vandensteen, I always think of amazing abdominal development.
Yeah, he was one of the first guys to have that really rock-hard condition back when not too many people had that.
Yeah, he did. He had the six-pack or the eight-pack, whatever, but he had an incredible physique, rock-hard, and fantastic abs.
And Bruce Randall won the pro division that year, Wayne.
Yes, and I understand that he dropped a huge amount of weight to drop to get into his top condition. It was some massive amount that he trimmed down, and he looked absolutely outstanding. And I remember he had great legs.
Yeah, and a good vacuum. I remember he had a good vacuum.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he had a huge rib cage and a great vacuum. And in fact, he had all the body parts were pretty good.
Yeah, I'll never forget reading that story about him, how he was so big and fat. I mean, he was really fat, and he lost all that weight and won the Mr. Universe.
Yeah, he was. He lost hundreds of pounds.
And also what was interesting about 1959 was that was the first year that the IFBB held their Mr. Universe. I believe Eddie Sylvester won that.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's interesting to note that, you know, almost 10 years that the NABBA Universe, when they first started, the IFBB really wasn't around. So it was really only the AAU in America and then the NABBA Universe over in London.
Yes, they were the two big contests. They were the ones that everybody wanted to go in and they wanted to win.
All right, so now we go into the 1960s and... Yeah. Henry Downs, also from England, was the winner of the Mr. Universe that year.
Yeah. He was a tall guy from memory, a big guy, and very good physique. And again, he was a hero in England. Henry Downs, people used to talk about him in awe. So he was a wonderful physique, and it's good that we can be talking about him today.
The Mr. America winner that year was Lloyd Lyrile, also known as Red Lyrile, and he was a big influence on Boyer Coe's career. And he did well. He took first in the short class, but he just didn't win the overall that year.
Yes, that's right. It was size beating size, I suppose you could say.
And another interesting competitor that year was Tony Emmett, who became famous later on. So way back in 1960, Tony was fourth place in the medium class.
Yes, Tony must have been pretty young back then.
Yeah, I was trying to find out his age. I couldn't find it. But yeah, he had to be really young to be competing in 1960.
And I was looking up on social media the other day, and I see that Tony Emmett appears to be living in USA now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've seen pictures of him also.
Yeah, that's the impression I got from his Facebook page.
And the pro winner that year was Paul Winter, who I remember seeing him... quite a few times because he competed in the NABBA Universe for many years.
Yes, yes, he did. He had a wonderful lat spread. I think you could say he probably had high lats. He had wonderful symmetry and style. Good-looking guy.
Mm-hmm.
Got a fit. He was also had parts in a few Hercules movies as well.
Oh, really? And where was he from, Wayne?
Antigua.
Okay.
In the West Indies, yeah. But I'm sure that England was his home, but he came from the West Indies originally.
Okay. So now we go to 1961, and Ray Routledge was the amateur winner. And Ray was the Mr. America winner that year also. So he was another AAU Mr. America winner, comes over to London and wins the universe.
Yes, I'm pretty sure he was in the tall class. I haven't got the full 61 results up just in front of me now, but my memory is that he was a taller guy and he was a very impressive physique. And as you said, he was a Mr. America as well.
And Pierre Vandensteen, who we were just talking about, was first place in the short class that year.
Yes. Yes, he was there for a number of years.
And then also notable was Bill Pearl wins his first pro win. So he wins the professional Mr. Universe. So that goes along with his 1953 amateur Mr. Universe. And then in 61, he won his first pro win.
Yeah, there's quite a few years between.
Yeah, but he's only 31 years old when he won his first pro win.
Yeah. He was probably still improving.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So then we go to 62, and Joe Abenda, also that year's Mr. America, and I remember that name, Joe Abenda, he wins the Mr. Universe that year.
Yeah.
And Len Sell was the pro winner, so we were just talking about Len Sell.
That's right, yes, that gave him the double of the amateur and the pro, yeah.
So that was like 3 years later, Len Sell wins the pro.
Yeah, that's right.
63, Tom Sansone takes first place. And Vern Weaver, I believe he was Mr. America that year, but there was 40 competitors in the Mr. America that year.
Yeah, I see. When you look at those results then in England of 63, you could say that USA dominated, didn't they? Because they took the amateur and the pro.
Right.
Plus there was Vern Weaver there as well.
Yeah. And Sansone won the America in 1958, so that was 5 years later that he came back and won the universe.
Yeah, quite a gap. Yes. I believe that Vern Weaver lived in York, Pennsylvania. Have you any information on that?
No. I don't really remember Vern Weaver that well.
Because I was in York in 76, and I met a person there who knew Vern well, and I got the impression that Vern lived in York, Pennsylvania at that time, which was 76. I know that's quite a few years later.
And then Joe Abenda, who won the amateur in 62, he comes back in 63 and he wins the pro. And he beats out Serge Noubre in second place.
Yeah, that was an amazing victory. And in fact, Joe Abenda must have been an outstanding physique because he did the amateur and pro in consecutive years, taking up two titles, which is a very good effort.
And one thing I noticed in the results too, Wayne, was Mickey Hargitay came back and competed that year. And he took fifth place in the Mr. America in the pro division.
Well, yes, you could say that things had moved on there, and he wasn't able to place right up at the top, as probably many people thought he might, but it just wasn't to be.
Right. All right, so then we go to 64, and John Hewlett was the winner from England.
Yes. Now, if I could describe John Hewlett to you in modern terms, he was like a smaller version of Dorian Yates.
Wow, really?
Yeah, so he was that sort of a style of physique, and I'm sure John would be happy for me to say that. but he was a big, solid guy. He was not the small, slim type of winner. He was a really rugged physique. That's the word I wanted. Mm-hmm. And he had a great physique, and he would do well in contests if he was competing today.
Wow. And Earl Menard, who we were just talking about, he won the pro division.
Yes, and of course, I believe he was born in the West Indies.
Yeah.
He lived in England for a time, I think, and of course, then he competed in pro wrestling, and he had parts in movies as well.
Yeah, I remember him in The Deep with Jacqueline Bisset. That's and Nick Nolte. Yeah, he had that. He had a fight scene with one of the guys who worked out at Vince's gym, right?
Yeah. Well, in the '70s, I met Earl in USA, and I attended a party at his house.
Oh, really?
Can't remember where it was now. It was the early '70s, so I had the pleasure of meeting him a long time ago.
And Earl competed in the very first Mr. Olympia in 1965, I think.
I had not remembered that.
Yeah.
So that's another piece of history.
All right, so now we go to 1965, and that was, like I just mentioned, that was the year they held the first Mr. Olympia. So in the NABBA universe, the amateur winner was Elmo Santiago from the USA.
Yes. He was a short guy. And got a feeling that his background was probably Puerto Rican, but that's just my memory of that. But I know he was very, very symmetrical, wonderful physique, no real weaknesses, and I felt that he was a very clear winner looking at the photographs from the time.
And Reg Park comes back and wins his third, and which would be his last NABBA Mr. Universe win. So he had three Mr. Universe. He won the amateur in 51, his first pro in 58, and then in 1965 he wins his third Mr. Universe win.
That's correct. And, of course, he went on competing in the universe, but he wasn't able to get any more victories.
Right. So that had to be around the time when he was probably a big inspiration to Arnold, because I think Arnold was only around 18 years old then. So Arnold had to really be looking up. And that was probably after he made his Hercules movies, right?
I'm not sure when Arnold made his first Hercules. Are you talking about Reg's Hercules?
Yeah,
Reg Park. Reg's. Okay, I think Reg was in about four or five Hercules movies.
Yeah.
And yes, he was an inspiration, and then he became a close friend of Arnold's.
Right. All right, so now we go to 1966, and speaking of Arnold, this was Arnold's debut in the Mr. Universe, and yeah. He ends up taking second to Chet Yorton. And interestingly, Chet Yorton did not win the AAU Mr. America. That was won by Bob Guida that year. But Chet Yorton yes. won the IFBB Mr. America, and then he went over and competed in the NABBA Universe.
Yes, yeah, Chet Yorton. I got to know him a little bit. In the 1970s, he came back to England again and did the Pro Universe, and then on the day after that, I had a photo and film shoot with him, and he was a great guy. But back here in 1966, he had too much maturity and condition for Arnold, and that's why Chet Yorton was the winner on that day.
Yeah, and the professional winner, again, was Paul Winter, who won
yes,
also in 1960. Yeah, 1960.
Yeah, Paul Winter had a fabulous career, didn't he?
Yeah.
Extending over a number of years.
Paul Winter's physique kind of reminds me of like an early Serge Nubre. He wasn't really cut, but he had good muscle mass and really good shape. I remember he had a very pleasing physique.
Very pleasing. It was like a small version of Serge Nubre because my memory is that Paul Winter was considerably shorter than Serge. So similar style. I remember he had beautiful skin, this wonderful shape, and the symmetry. And that's why he placed high for so long.
Yeah, sort of like an earlier Serge Nubre, right? Because when Serge started competing, he was just a bigger, almost smoother version of what he would become later on.
Yeah.
All right, so now we go to 67, and of course, this was Arnold's very first Mr. Universe win, and he comes back and he wins the amateur division, and there was really a great lineup and a lot of great future champions, because Dennis Tinerino took second to Arnold in the tall class, and Dennis Tinerino was the AAU Mr. America winner that year. John Citroni won the short class, and Albert Beckles won the medium class over Roy Callender. So you got a stacked lineup there, some really great future superstars in the sport of bodybuilding.
You could say it was a year with an incredible quality.
Yeah. So that was John Citrone's first, I believe, Mr. Universe win, right, in his class?
Yes, and he won the short class, right?
Right, he won the short, and Albert won the medium.
And then, of course, he had to stand next to Arnold for the overall.
Yeah.
And, of course, we all know that that ended up with Arnold taking the title.
Right. And then Bill Pearl won, again, another title. He won the professional Mr. Universe. So every time you see pictures of Arnold in his first Mr. Universe win, he's standing next to Bill Pearl on the podium.
That's right, yes. Yes, that was an interesting photograph, because if you jump forward a few years to 1971, a lot of people thought they would see Bill Pearl competing against Arnold in the 71 Pro Universe, but it wasn't to be.
Right. And Bill Pearl looked really massive that year in 67. That had to be his biggest to that point, you know?
I'm sure that's correct. I agree with that.
All right, so now we go to 1968, and this was another great year. Dennis Tinerino, who was second to Arnold the year before, he comes back and he wins the amateur division. And I believe Jim Hayslop, who was that year's Mr. America in 1968, he takes second place to Dennis. Wilfred Sylvester wins the short class, beating out Franco Colombo, who took second. But that was another stacked lineup in the amateur division.
Yes, well, that was quite a hell of a contest, and what a list of competitors that you've just read out there.
And then what was interesting, I noticed in the notes here, Wayne, was they had a most muscular award, and Franco won that.
Yes, well, that doesn't surprise me, and I wonder if that was the first year they had that subdivision.
I think
possibly
so.
It was.
I never noticed it before that year.
Yeah. Yes, so, a lot of people don't know that Franco had a NABBA career as well as his IFBB career.
Right, right. So Arnold wins his first pro title that year, and he beats out John Citrone. Is it Citrone or Citroni, Wayne?
I think Citroni is probably correct.
Okay.
I like Citroni, so I think that's probably more the Italian way of saying it.
So. Yeah. So Arnold was only 21 years old, and from the pictures that year, he looked really massive. I think he was around 250 pounds is what I read. But he really didn't look prepared for the contest. He was very white. He didn't have a tan. And he was kind of smooth. And a lot of people said that Citroni could have won that contest.
Yes. I think that if there hadn't been such a height difference, because I still say that the bigger man always seems to have the advantage in an overall type of situation. And I think that Arnold's extra size was just enough that got him over the line. Mm-hmm. Maybe the judges didn't want to be seen favouring a British guy in a tight decision. We just don't really know what were all the factors in that decision. And then how close was it? I mean, was it like 5-4 for Arnold?
Yeah.
We just don't know how tight it really was. But that's a good question that you posed there.
Yeah. And then, of course, Arnold famously went on to compete in Miami Beach right after that. And then he lost to Frank Zane.
Yes, because Arnold just wasn't sharp enough at the time.
Right, right.
And I believe that the last time? Was that the last time Arnold was defeated?
No, he lost to Sergio at 69.
Correct, that's right.
Yeah. And I remember Frank Zane telling a story when he heard that Arnold was coming over to compete against him in Miami. Jim Haislop, who was a good friend of Frank, because they lived together in Tampa, and they trained together. And Jim was at that 68 Mr. Universe because he took second to Tenorino. Jim Haislop told Frank Zane, he said, "Don't worry about Arnold. He's too smooth." And then, of course, Frank Zane went on to beat Arnold that year.
Yes, that's true. And, in fact, I think Frank Zane went on to later say one day that was the best victory of his life, or some comment like that.
Right.
When he was being interviewed one year, I think it might have been at an Olympia or maybe.
Yeah, the 79 Olympia, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. You heard that comment too?
Yeah, he did it on TV. Yeah. That's what pissed Arnold off, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's the comment.
All right, so now we go to 69, and it almost seems like, Wayne, like this was really the NABBA Universe's heyday. You know, when you get to the late 60s, early 70s, you had all these great, great champions competing. So 69, again, we had some really great bodybuilders in the amateur. Boyer Coe won the Mr. America that year, and then he goes on and he wins the overall at the amateur Mr. Universe.
Yeah, that's right. And wasn't Jim Haislop in the mix that year as well?
Yeah, Jim came back, and he won the tall class, and Boyer won the medium, and Franco won the short class.
Yeah. So it was really an American-dominated year, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then in Boyer Coe's class in the medium, Albert Beckles again was second place, and Roy Callender was in third place. So you had some real superstars in that contest.
Yeah, and here's another thing, too. In 1969, Arnold was then living in USA.
Right.
Because from research I've got from David New, it appears that Arnold moved to USA in 1968 after the NABBA Universe.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was now living and training in USA in the 69 contest period.
Yeah, because in 68 he won the Universe second time in NABBA. Then he went over and he lost to Frank Zane right after that. And then he stayed in America after that.
That's correct, yes. That's an interesting little bit of extra history on Arnold and his connection with USA, and then how he later went on and he has dual citizenship of USA and Austria.
And what were you mentioning about his visa, Wayne? You knew some details about that.
Yes, I got it off the website. He started out with various types of visas, and then he had a green card, and then he qualified, I think it's 5 years later, for a USA citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
And then he waited a little bit longer because it was then possible to keep his Austrian citizenship and also to have USA citizenship. So what I read is he's a dual citizen of both countries. So that's just a little bit of an aside on Arnold's background and history. And people are so interested in Arnold, I thought it was worth mentioning.
Yeah. So the visa that he had the first year, he wasn't allowed to work until the second year. Is that correct?
I think that's probably how the visa worked. Apparently, Joe Weider arranged the first visa for him. Mm-hmm. And then there was a better version after that, maybe the second year. And then later came the green card. And then once you've got the green card, I understand you're pretty much set. Then you're on your way to becoming an American citizen.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think Arnold's original plan when he first came over here in 1968 was just to beat all the Americans and then go back to Europe. And I think Joe Weider was even talking about having him be like the European representative for Muscle Builder or for Weider Enterprises over in Europe. But then he eventually decided, I guess he loved America so much, after a year of being in America, he wanted to stay.
Yeah, I think you're pretty right there. That's how it started out. And I believe his first car in USA is a VW Beetle. Have you heard that story?
Yeah. He could barely fit in it.
That's right. That's the one.
So, what, Wayne, looking at the pictures, I know you weren't there in 69. You were there the following year. But what do you think about Boyer Coe beating out Jim Haslop? I mean, do you think that was a good decision?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that, because I was just mildly disappointed, because I thought that Jim Haslop, from what I saw from the photographs, had that title, but that's not the way the judges saw it. And one of my biggest regrets is that I never saw Jim Haslop on stage. I missed him by 1 year, because I started to go every year from 1970 onwards, and of course 69 was Jim Haslop's last universe. So
yeah,
I regret missing seeing him, but perhaps I'll get to visit him when I visit you in the not too distant future. It might be possible.
Yeah, I'd love to set that up.
I'd put it this way. I think Jim Haslop might have been unlucky in a very close decision. That would be the nicest way to put it.
Yeah. When I interviewed Boyer, he was saying he was always getting frustrated every time he competed against Jim Haslop, because Jim would always beat him, you know, even when he won when Jim won the Mr. America in 1968, I think Boyer won just about every body part, and Jim still won the overall in the Mr. America. Yeah. So the first time that Boyer ever beat Jim was at that Mr. Universe in 1969.
Yeah, well, that must have felt pretty good for Boyer, I would think.
Yeah, for sure. We go to the pro division that year. Arnold wins the pro. Again, another stacked lineup, because Dennis Tinerino came back after winning the amateur the year before, and Tinerino again takes second to Arnold, and Serge Noubre takes third, and John Citroni comes back, and he wins the short class again. I think this is like the second or third year in a row.
Yeah, so that was an incredible lineup and a very strong year, wasn't it?
Yeah. Usually the pro division is lightly contested, but that year it was really, really great. And then Arnold, I should also mention, as anyone who's seen the pictures, was remarkably improved from 68 to 69. He was lighter, but he was definitely tan. He was more ripped. And that was the year, I believe, he took second to Sergio at the Mr. Olympia.
Yes, and also that was another occasion when John Citroni stood next to Arnold for an overall pose down.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so now we go to 1970, and I think, Wayne, if you're looking at the whole spectrum of the NABBA Mr. Universe, 1970 had to be one of the most outstanding years. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. At the very beginning of the year, I had a premonition and a feeling it was going to be a very special year. I also had a feeling it would probably be Arnold's last NABBA Universe. So I started saving up and arranging time off work, and I managed to get myself there for that 1970 Universe. And the extra bonus was also seeing Dave Draper competing in that contest. And, of course, Reg Park, Arnold, and then you had Frank Zane in the amateurs. And they were just some of the stars. I'm sure you're going to remind me of a few other stars that were there that year.
Yeah. So how did you arrange that, Wayne? I mean, did you call up, who was promoting the show at the time? Was it Oscar Heidenstam?
Yeah, Oscar Heidenstam. And I had been writing articles for Oscar for a number of years. So he knew who I was. And he was very kind to me when I got over there, and I'd meet with him in his office. and he made sure I had a good seat in the audience. And at the prejudging, I remember standing up because the prejudging was held in a hotel ballroom.
Okay.
And that was on the day before the contest. And the hotel has since been demolished. But one interesting thing, Dave Draper nearly missed the prejudging. The warming up was downstairs, and he didn't hear the call that he had to be on stage. And I remember them saying, I think it was Oscar, that if Dave Draper's not here in 1 minute, he's out of the contest.
Wow, no kidding.
And then suddenly Dave came rushing out onto the stage and said he didn't know that they'd been calling for him. So he was in the contest, and he subsequently took third place, and Reg Park got second.
Yeah.
But I saw it really as those two positions reversed, and of course Arnold was a very clear winner.
So talk a little bit about that prejudging, Wayne, because I've seen pictures, and I'm sure a lot of people have seen pictures of the NABBA universe, and it's quite unlike anything we see today, because it wasn't held in a theater, it wasn't held on a stage, it was literally held in a room, and the bodybuilders were right in front of the judges, and there was no lighting, it was just flat, regular room lighting, so it was really, really unique.
It was raw, is the best way to put it. And it was very basic. It was as honest as you could get from the point of view that there was nothing to artificially improve or enhance anything. As I said, the bodybuilders would pump up downstairs and run up on stage. The judges were sitting at makeshift tables. And I remember the audience, we didn't even have chairs. We stood up. And I found a chair at the back, and I stood on the chair so I could get a shot of the judging over other people's heads. So it wasn't seated. It was just sort of very, I loosely use the word amateurish, because it was run in a basic fashion, and it wasn't really put on for the benefit of the public. It was just to judge the universe. And then the next day, the theater finals was when everything happened. And so they called it the show, and you call it the finals. So that would be held on the next day, the Saturday afternoon.
Was it open to the public, or was it just like press and officials?
Well, at the prejudging, I'm not sure whether I had to pay to go into that or whether it was just open, because a lot of people were still at work on a Friday. On the Saturday, of course, you had to have a proper ticket because it was in a nice theatre. Without getting out my program, because I've got all the programs, I'm guessing it might have been in the Victoria Palace. And that's a nice theatre in London. So, of course, that was all proper, very professional seating.
Yeah.
And I can remember there was a guy walking up and down the aisle the whole time to make sure that people weren't taking photographs or a movie, because at that time it wasn't allowed from the audience.
And how did you get around that? Because I know you've got footage of that contest.
I got my camera out at the right moment, usually when the guy was walking away from me down the aisle, and luckily that was always when the most important people were on stage. Otherwise, they would have missed out.
Right. Were you? Did you have it hidden in anything, or did you just like sort of put
it in your clothes? Yeah, I had it in a brown paper bag on my lap. And then later on, when I told Oscar Heidenstam about it, he said he was pleased that I'd done it because I'd preserved history that otherwise would have been lost. And from then on, he gave me his full approval to continue on as the historian on film of the NABBA universe for the rest of the years that he was in charge.
Yeah. Yeah, I said this before about you, Wayne, and I'll say it again. I mean, I think, thank God you were there, because you've gotten video footage of some of these early contests and some of these superstars in the bodybuilding world that we never would have seen. You know, we've only would have saw still photographs. So because of your, you know, I remember one of the first movies I bought. This is when you were selling the movies before they were even VHS tapes. And you had the one of Arnold and Franco posing in Australia by the pool. And I used to watch that over when I was 20 years old. I used to watch that almost every day, you know. And I would have to put it on the projector to see it. But, you know, you really captured some of these legends on film when they were at their best, including, of course, Sergio Oliva. And we'll talk about him in a minute also.
Well, I'm glad I did it, because I always felt that it was very important and it deserved to be preserved and recorded. And that's why I took the chance, you could say, to go ahead and do it, because I could have been thrown out of the theater.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, when I look back at that footage of Arnold from 1970 on that particular afternoon, I still marvel at how good he looked compared with today's standards. If you look at today, Arnold would be still right up there with the best around today.
Right. Talk a little bit about that prejudging, because back then it was a whole different world. 1970, we're going way back. They didn't have the tanning and stuff. So I noticed looking at the pictures, I believe it was John Bubb who was also in the lineup. I think he was fourth behind Arnold and Reg Park and Dave Draper. He looked white as a ghost. Right. So some of these guys didn't have a tan. Were they just using a natural tan? Was it from the sunlight?
Far as I remember, it was just natural tan and just laying out in the sun. And if you lived in England, there wasn't a lot of sun to get a tan.
Right.
So I don't remember artificial tan. I don't remember much oiling up. There was certainly no posing music as we know it today. That was the other thing that was missing. I seem to remember there was music background that was played at the finals, and they used to have a live orchestra playing music, whereas then later on, I couldn't say what year it was that individual posing routines came into being, but that'd be a good question. When did posing music start? I haven't got the answer to that.
Well, I think from what I remember, I saw the Mr. Olympia in 77, 78, 79, and I think it started maybe around 79. I mean, I remember seeing the first couple of years, I don't think they had posing music. I don't think so.
That's about what I would have remembered as well.
Yeah.
So that means there was no posing music for Arnold when he won the Universes back in those years.
Right. So tell me a little bit of your impressions of Arnold, because I remember seeing pictures of that prejudging. So when they all came out, as you said, Arnold was the clear winner. What was it like to see him? I mean, he's an icon in the sport. He's a legend. I've only seen pictures of him. I never saw him. I never got a chance to see him compete. So when you saw him up there, just describe what he looked like. I mean, to me, he looked like the perfect physique, bigger than everybody and perfectly developed.
Okay, well, here's a few recollections of what I thought at the time. Number one, I thought he seemed to be in a different league. He was, he had everything, he had it to the degree of perfection that you would expect the best in the world to possess.
Mm-hmm.
He had the definition, the separation. He had no obvious weak body parts. Everything was in pretty good proportion. He had great size. His arms were huge. I remember his twisting poses, twisting back pose was just unbelievable. Yeah. I don't think anybody does that better. And some of his side chest type of poses were just extraordinary. Posing wasn't such a big thing then, but he did present himself perfectly. He had his angles right. He always gave the best angle to the central judge. So everything that he could work on, he'd worked on and he'd honed it to perfection. And as I said, he just looked a class above the others. He looked the true professional, and they were the guys that were really making up the other places. And he acted like a winner, and he came out on stage. I wouldn't say he strutted. He had an air about him. He knew he was the best, and that showed through in everything he did, his actions. Just the charisma. So I think everybody in that contest that was competing against him, they knew they were filling up the other placings. Dave Draper looked fantastic that day. Probably the only thing that may have cost him just a fraction was that if he'd had perhaps slightly heavier leg development. But I thought he deserved to be second. And, of course, it turned out that Reg Park got second and Dave was third. And John Bubb, the British guy, was fourth. But it was a hell of a lineup, and it was an awe-inspiring sight seeing Arnold come out on stage. Something I'll never forget.
Yeah, well, I'm jealous you got to see it.
So I was very fortunate, very, very lucky.
You mentioned his charisma, and of course we've heard all these stories now about Arnold used to psych out everybody, and of course he's got the personality and the charisma. What was he like at the prejudging? Wasn't it true that the NABBA universe always had very long prejudgings?
I would say that's correct because everybody got such a fair go. So if you could say there was slightly better light left of center, for example, then I would say that they would move the bodybuilders around so that everybody got a chance in the best light. Or if they were on the end of a line, and this is more in the amateurs where there were bigger groups of people, then they reversed the line so that the people got to be on the best side or in the center, and everybody got an endlessly fair go, and that meant that it took time. So nobody was rushed on and off stage, and everybody was treated with great respect.
Okay. And was Arnold conversing with some of the other competitors at all?
I think he was conversing with Reg Park because they were personal friends. I don't remember him chatting to Dave Draper, but Dave was pretty late on the scene that day. I'd love to know whether they chatted much in the pump-up area backstage.
Yeah.
But I dare say that Reg and Arnold always chatted, and they were good mates. They were good friends from way back. But once they went off the stage, the fans, you didn't get to mingle with them. They would go back to the change room and they'd disappear, and you would come out and you'd all go your separate ways. But nowadays, I think, take for example, after an Olympia, when people come out, everybody stands around and chats to the champions and mingles.
Yeah.
But in those days, it wasn't quite like that. It was more private, and you all just did your thing and you went away and you came back the next day for the finals. And again, after the event, I can't remember where Arnold went after he won the event. I've got a feeling that in actual fact he headed straight for the airport. This is 1970, because he had to get back to USA.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's when he competed in Columbus, Ohio the next day, yeah.
Yeah, so I would say he must have had a taxi waiting for him as soon as he came off stage. So that's why I said I don't remember these winners ever hanging around and being available to chat or to do photographs, because usually they were gone once it was over, and you then saw your pictures in the magazines of the guys. This is before digital cameras, so not everybody was taking loads of photographs, as happens today. It was quite a different time, wasn't it?
Yeah, totally. Let's talk also about the amateur division that year, because Frank Zane was the amateur winner. Chris Dickerson was the short class winner, and Franco got second that year to Chris. And Frank Richard was the tall class winner. And, of course, Chris Dickerson also won the America that year. And when Zane won the medium class, Albert Beckles got second. It seems like Albert got a lot of seconds in the Mr. Universe, in the NABBA Mr. Universe. But Frank Zane really looked amazing, didn't he, that year when he won the amateur.
Yeah, Frank Zane, he had a touch of the Arnold about him. By that I mean that he came on stage and he looked and acted like a winner. He had everything perfectly prepared for the contest. He was faultless. So although the other guys were good champions, Frank Zane was a great champion. And I thought that he clearly did deserve that overall victory, and I think he took it convincingly.
Yeah. Yeah, Frank Zane's physique... you know, sometimes I'll read these message boards and these younger kids will get on there and they're like, I don't know how this guy won Mr. Olympia. He looks like a swimmer. And I think they're just going by how much he weighed or how big maybe his muscles measured, but they're not looking at the overall physique. And I think if you look at pictures of Frank, especially from that year in 1970, when he won that Mr. Universe, and I remember seeing a picture where he was standing in the lineup with the medium class. And there was all other types of physiques in there. And Frank's physique is just beautiful. You know, just the way it's all put together and the way it flows and the shape and the symmetry. You really can't develop that. I mean, I think it's just a genetic thing. And it was the way he went about preparing for shows and how he shaped his physique. But there's just a natural symmetry and grace to his physique that just can't be duplicated.
He had a physical perfection that the others couldn't top with anything better.
Right.
And again, he had that winner's charisma and air about him that when he came on stage, he wasn't cocky at all. He just acted as if he was the best there, and he was. Mm-hmm. The judges could clearly see it. It didn't matter about there being heavier guys than him. He just had the package that just looked like the champion. And of course, he was rewarded accordingly. And He and Arnold made a great duo for USA, although, of course, Arnold was representing Austria, but
yeah.
They both lived in USA, and then, no doubt, you probably want to mention Christine Zane as well.
Yeah, she won the bikini universe. When did they start holding that, Wayne, do you know?
I'd have to check my records, but I would say it was probably late 60s, if not maybe even 1970. I have to look at my past list of winners because I didn't look at that when I was running through all the winners today. And then when we do part two of this interview later on, there's a guy representing USA who won the Masters Universe, but we'll come to him in our next chat. So I must have a look back and see when the Bikini Universe started. And that's what it was called those in those days. It was called Miss Bikini.
Yeah.
And it was roughly equivalent to, say, the figure class of today. That's really what it was. But they just called it Bikini.
Yeah. And that was a great classic photograph with Frank and Arnold and holding Christine in the middle. Those are awesome.
Yeah, I have that original of that photograph hanging in my home gym.
Wow. So what did you think about some of the other amateur competitors like Dickerson and I think Boyer Coe was there? And well, Boyer Coe actually was in, didn't he win the short class in the pro division?
Yeah, that's correct. And of course, with Dickerson, you could see that there was the makings of an absolute future champion because he had practically everything in mm-hmm. his package that he presented. About the only thing you could say he didn't have was massive arms, but everything else he had was near perfection, and you could see that he was going to be a champion, and that continued on. He was a champion at NABBA and ending out his career with the 1982 Mr. Olympia title. So, yeah, you could see great things coming for Chris Dickerson, and Boyer Coe was also right up there as well.
What did you think about Dickerson beating Franco? Because I remember Franco complained about that for many years after that, saying Chris Dickerson never should have beat him because Franco was more muscular and more ripped.
Yes, those two comments are correct. He was more muscular and more ripped. Probably the only thing that I think that got Dickerson in front of him was I think he had slightly better symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
His stage presence was very smooth, very professional. Franco was more Herculean, but the judges didn't go for his overall look, and they just preferred the overall style and symmetry of Chris Dickerson, and it had to be very close, and I think it came down to a personal preference for style or physique.
Yeah, and Dickerson had great legs back then, and I think in 1970 there weren't a lot of guys who had great leg development, correct?
That's correct, and even though Franco had pretty reasonable legs.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Dickerson had superb legs that were just almost dominated his physique. When you looked at him, you saw the calves and you saw the rest of the physique after that.
How about Albert Beckles? What were your impressions of him?
Albert, well, he was often a runner-up, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
He did get some good victories as his career went along. And if you look at it further down the track, he had some incredible victories at the Night of Champions in the IFBB Pro.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
In the amateur years, maybe he wasn't quite as defined as he later became as his career matured, and I think that's probably why Albert didn't win more titles as an amateur, although he did win that 1971 IFBB World Championships or Mr. Universe, which you want, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
and he was absolutely outstanding in that contest. And that was just a week after the NABBA Universe. So he was right up there. Best arms, I think, were equal to the best arms I've ever seen. But maybe symmetry sometimes allowed him to be beaten by other top amateurs in the universe.
Yeah, speaking of symmetry, it seems like the NABBA Universe always put a big focus on that. It wasn't just about size and about muscularity or definition. A lot of it was the symmetry, correct?
Yeah, so it wasn't the biggest wins because a lot of the overall winners did not come from the tall class, which is like the heavyweight class, so to speak. A lot of them came from the short class and the medium class. So they were looking for symmetry, for the total package, and not just for the biggest, as sometimes perhaps happens a bit more today.
Yeah. All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank my friend Wayne Galash for calling in from Australia. and giving me that great interview. And next week, we will have part two of our interview where we start off talking about the 1971 NABBA Mr. Universe and go up through the 1970s. Again, there's so much history and there's so many competitions and there's so many great legends to talk about that we had to split this interview into a couple parts. So we will be talking to Wayne again next week about the rest of our conversation. So join us next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank our sponsors, Redcon One, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Happy New Year again, everybody, and we will see you next week. Take care.